Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 151.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we marvel at the ability of the British to keep their shit together while being stuck in a Brexit and Trump sandwich this week, which is the most undignified type of sandwich. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I can't watch Black Mirror until everyone else watches it and tells me exactly what is untraumatizing enough for me to watch, because I made a mistake last season, watched some things that I can't unsee, and I'm kind of ruined psychologically for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? So
yes,
I need other people to do that for me. Today, we're going to talk about Mexico and tariffs, the state visit to the UK, an overlooked mass shooting, and the future of travel. I'm really excited by this panel. What? Because you know what? I've known this guy for a long time, and he's so funny. He's actually so funny.
That's the sweetest thing he's ever said. Coming from another comic, that is a compliment.
Every time you're like, no, this one I mean. Yeah. This one is actually
this
funny.
This is for real, though, you guys. No, and he's, oh my God, we're lucky that he's back in town because he's been opening for Jim Gaffigan for like a million, kajillion weeks here. But he's here. He's been on all the late night shows, all of the Tonight shows and the late shows and the late show and the all of the things he's been on. He also has a podcast called A Little Bit Me that you should immediately subscribe to. And he's just so great, you guys. It's Ted Alexandro. Hey, Ted.
Hey, thank you so much.
We also have returning to the show. You know her. You love her. She's overly attached to her parents at a ripe age. What? No, you're very young. She's a young lady.
Oh, I thought you meant them. Wow, I didn't even think you meant me.
She's done her research.
I'm going to go home. like to my parents.
She just taped for Colbert, so set your DVRs, because that's going to be airing soon. And she's just an overall hilarious woman. We've done shows together, both here and in other places. Average Women with Average Rage. I know a lot of you know about
Pitch
that. Pitch
winner
for the Yes and Laughter Lab. What? Maybe you'll hear about that.
We'll be pitching next week.
and you guys, her name is Leah Bonham. Hey, Leah. Yeah.
Hello.
Okay. You guys, should we get into it? Should we just start?
Let's do it.
All right. Let us start with topic number one. Okay, you guys. So Donnie took his like ill-fitting suits and his tweets and his penchant for ruining everything onto an official state visit in the United Kingdom. And yes, he kissed the Queen with that mouth. And now I get an acute pang of embarrassment every time he visits another country. Am I alone? I guess it's just me, right?
Everybody knows at this point. You know what I mean? I feel like, wait, no, everybody's like, yeah, you know?
Yeah. It's yeah. like watching your, you know, when you watch a friend do stand up for the first time at like an open mic night and you kind of want to kill yourself because you're like, they're not going to be good at all, you know? But they think they're killing. Yeah, oh, it's horrible. That's Donnie. That's Donnie, but he wields immense power. Like many open mic nighters.
Oh, yeah. Well, the embarrassment doesn't start when he lands on foreign soil, though. Then it's heightened because you know other people are watching. It's almost like when you have guests over for the holidays and the embarrassing member of your family is on full display.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of dynamic of like, oh, now the world gets to see
yeah,
what
Uncle
we live
Donnie.
With.
Yeah,
every
right.
day.
And I just, well, I remind myself that they're doing Brexit. They're doing Brexit. They're doing Brexit. So like they're like the Schadenfreude of what a fucking miserable situation that is kind of gets me through the news of this week. He weighed in a lot of British politics this week. What do you think about? I mean, he, you know, he kind of like he really wants his buddy Boris Johnson to be the next prime minister.
It made me, I actually laughed in an uncomfortable, horrible way, but also the USA Today article was that Donnie took an unusual diplomatic step. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, that is such a nice phrase for like way out of line. Yeah. Being like, can you get my buddy in here or what? Which,
also telling Theresa May, maybe you should stick around.
Just stay. Why are you like, doing what you said?
It's just so ridiculous and embarrassing. And well, what's also interesting is he kind of delivered a snub to the Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn, refusing to meet him, which is also...
He said, I don't know
so
Jeremy.
Adult. Yeah, I don't know him, so yeah. I'm not going to be meeting him. And then, of course, Corbyn is protested the Buckingham Palace banquet or whatever, gala ball, fancy cotillion, whatever the fuck they were doing, because, you know, because Donnie was there. And, oh, yeah, this is what Donnie said about Jeremy. He said, me and Jeremy on first name basis, it doesn't matter. He said, I think that he is, from where I come from, somewhat of a negative force.
Yeah.
I think that people could look to do things correctly as opposed to criticize. So, anyway.
From where he comes from.
Yeah.
I don't even know. What is that?
He's really against criticizing.
From the fucking sewage pile that he emerges from every morning. Corbyn, for his part, criticized Trump's treatment of refugees at the border. And the Labour's foreign affairs spokesperson, Emily Thornberry, said, she said, and I just thought this was nice. She said, he's dragging your country backwards. It's wrong for you to be as racist as you are. It's wrong for you to be as misogynistic as you are. It's wrong for you to assault women. Why should we be afraid to say those things? Thank you. That was my impression.
That was lovely.
So good. I thought I was
Emily Thornberry, whose voice I've never heard. That was just me. I don't know what she fucking sounds like.
She's
American.
She'd be all right, mate. You know, she could be one of those. I have no idea. So, anyways, okay. So here's my question for you guys. What do you? I mean, how special is this special relationship? Especially now considering the pending Brexit situation. Is it pending? I don't understand. It's taking forever. And we've really like revered this relationship. We call it a special relationship. You know, there was a movie called A Special Relationship.
It was actually said in the movie Love Actually when Billy Bob Thornton plays the American president.
That's right.
And Hugh Grant is like, this special relationship is not so special when someone's a bully. And I was like, wow.
Wow. Very prescient. Very.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this relationship and how much is Trump damaging it?
A lot of that is just kind of advertising, right? And packaging like the special relation, like these phrases that are thrown out there. I don't know how special it actually is. It's almost like where the face of global power,
mm-hmm.
And the baton was passed one to the other. But I don't know like how special it really is. I think it's more just kind of it's just a marketing term that like I don't see like I guess the relationship needs to be special in terms of like keeping the world order and aligning, you know, aligning together. But
yeah, like it's in terms of it being like a vestige of World War II,
right.
You know, like literally the anniversary that he's there for. And it's special. But in terms of trade, I mean, Theresa May said that Britain and the United States last year
it's millions.
Traded $240 billion. British companies employ a million people across the United States. And every morning, about a million people in the UK go to work for American employers in the UK.
So many people.
So there's a lot of money, but you know, know what? We have a probably more special money relationship with, like, Germany and definitely a more special relationship with China. So money-wise, it's kind of like whatever. In terms of, like, being the moral and ethical leaders of the world in a time of, you know, should a world war, you know, emerge?
Or should we start it?
Should we start one? Yeah, that's the kind of, I mean, I wonder, now that China is so much of a bigger force, is it kind of silly to think that we in the UK and France are the kind of moral hold up morality for the globe?
Well, I don't think that aren't anymore. We were, and then now I feel like it's wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We go in and who knows what's going to happen? You know, we could start taxing avocados 25%. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I feel like it used to be like this is a special relationship where we agree, and then now it's like, ooh, you know, he's special. You know what I mean? When you have like your, you have like a relationship with somebody that you're like, oh, we have a special, when you kind of like hate each other, but you have to keep them close because you have no idea who's going to go off the rocker.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And again, and like Ted was saying, it's all branding. It's kind of like at this point, everyone's just, he criticized Meghan Markle criticized him, right? And called him a misogynist or something.
Aptly described him.
Which is accurate. and then he meets her husband and is like, what's up? And, you know, and of course he's grinning and bearing it. Like, he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to meet this man. He probably agrees with his wife. Mm. His wife just had a baby. As did I, which is why me and Megan are the same.
Congratulations.
I pointed this out before. Thank you, Ted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whole thing feels just kind of ridiculous. And it also the pomp and circus and all that stuff just does it. It feels like part of me is like, why are they all just like, why doesn't everything look like the Google offices where people are just hanging out on beanbags and like welcoming the president that way? You know what I mean? It just feels a little like a hilarious, antiquated thing. Although I love tradition, whatever. So I just contradicted myself.
I actually feel more badly for them that they have to maintain the kind of auspices of a special relationship when Trump is in office. Because, I mean, it was hard enough... I think when Bush was in office for them to say like, yes, we still have, you know, a special relationship, and for them to get behind the Iraq war and all, you know,
and to send people to their death. I mean, troops.
Yeah. So that's the real nature of the special relationship.
Ugh, fuck,
you know, but for them to kind of have to get behind Trump as the face of America has got to be even more galling on their end.
Yeah, I mean, they disagree on the nuclear deal. They disagree on trade wars. They disagree. I mean, but they disagree on climate change. Although they're in such a shit situation with Brexit. And the funny thing is dangling a trade deal. I mean, Britain's going to have to write like 14,000 trade deals, you know, like one.
But he's dangling a phenomenal trade deal.
Sorry, you're right. Yeah, you're
missing the adjective.
And you know, it like every president since World War II has wanted a strong allyship between the UK and Europe. This is the first president that's like, no, fucking diss those guys. So it's like he wants. Obviously, to create some sort of a rivalry where we have the
it's high school.
Yeah. He wants to make a locker click with the UK. Locker click? You know, that was a phrase in high school.
I was in a locker click. It was not comfortable.
The one thing I did want to say before we move on to Mexico and tariffs, this is what he said about a trade deal with the UK. I think everything with a trade deal is on the table. When you're dealing with trade, everything's on the table. So NHS or anything else or a lot more than that, but everything will be on the table, absolutely. He knows a lot of words, so it's really fun quoting him. The thing about that I found just so fascinating is it to say that the NHS is on the table – threatens their actual healthcare system. What? It's basically saying don't have the universal healthcare that you have because we want to, if you want a trade deal with us, we will insist on infiltrating that market. And it and we don't want to negotiate with NHS or whatever. I don't know how the details of that would work out, but it basically, you know, it wants capitalism in that healthcare system. Isn't that fucking nuts?
Oh, it's nuts. I read that and I was like, I assume people are going to be like, no way.
Get the fuck out of here. I'm getting, you know, my tonsils checked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one thing that people love. Are happy with. And yeah.
They're into it.
Yeah. So, but that's typical Trump to kind of just launch a grenade into the one thing that he knows is going to get a huge reaction.
Right, right. No, so, and there it is.
Surprising.
And it get more baby blimps of himself made.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like, it's like everybody's trying, like you're saying, to behave and do what they're supposed to do around this tradition of this meeting of the two. And then you've just got this like wild child in the middle just being like, did you take your health care? You know what I mean? It's just.
Yeah. Sadiq Khan is really short.
How long is this going to keep? And he called the mayor a stone cold loser.
Yeah. But then he talked about his height, right? I think he said like, it was such a weird criticism. It was something like Bill de Blasio it sucks, but at least Sadiq Khan he's taller than Sadiq Khan or something like that. What?
Are we announcing like a wrestling match? It's just wild. Stone cold loser.
Stone cold loser. So embarrassing. Okay, let's talk about Mexico, you guys. So Donnie wants to impose tariffs on Mexico as early as next week. Fun. Avocado toast, we're coming for you. And if they don't, and the reason they're doing it is because Mexico isn't stopping migrants at the border because Mexico, as we all know, rounds up people from Honduras, walks them through Mexico, and then forces them to go into Texas. That's what Mexico's doing. And so we're like, just stop doing that, Mexico, and there won't be a problem.
You can stop the bus tours that you're taking.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this whole situation?
Well, it's fascinating to me how Mexico has become so central in like America's global politics now. I don't think I ever heard Mexico mentioned hardly during the Obama years or the Bush years. But like between the wall,
there was like maybe a Cinco de Mayo tweet from the White House. Yes,
that's true.
All right,
that's true.
Ted, pushing let's give beer. Him credit. Yeah.
But like, you know, between the wall and now the tariffs, it's like he's just kind of vilifying brown people like in this way that I think it's just a convenient. It's kind of like playing to his base, I think, is like when you zoom out, like he's just trying to, you know, make it look like Mexico is this gateway for brown criminals to get into America one way or another.
He's riling people up.
And then the idea, okay, because what he wants, by the way, there were talks, I think last night or whatever, between Pence and Pompeo and Mexican officials.
As long as there wasn't a woman in the room.
There was no, don't worry about that. Don't worry about
that.
mom would have been there. Mother. Only casually at home does he refer to her as mom. So those talks fell apart because what they want is for Mexico to be like, yeah, no problem. We'll take care of it. And we'll take care of it by June 10th, or I think that's the date, June 12th or something.
Tuesday.
It's literally, yeah. And they gave them like 2 weeks notice. What? I mean, the problem with the migrant crisis, and I do think crisis is a strong word because it's kind of these things are cyclical, whatever. But the migrant situation is not something that can be dealt with in 2 weeks. Right? Like, I think we can all agree to that. And it's not something that is like Mexico alone. It requires, I think, international, multilateral international humanitarian approach. And those things like take a lot of time and they require infrastructure building in like Honduras and El Salvador. They require resources that those countries don't have because those are the countries that are being too dominated right now by like very powerful gangs and drug cartels. And that's why we're seeing these migrants come over the border. And then Mexico doesn't necessarily have the resources to single-handedly deal with drug cartels in the violence coming out of Honduras and El Salvador, right? So, like, a lot of countries need to be involved in helping this situation, right? And so just to, like, levy attacks that would affect American consumers, I don't understand how that helps anybody.
Well, I mean, obviously, but also it's in every situation we've created this environment where we can't have a discussion. And like you're saying, this to actually work on this situation, we need to have what you're saying, infrastructure, people to sit down, work together, be like, how is this the thing that we could work on and make better? And now everything's like catchphrases and anger and who's the villain and who's the good guy. So it's like we've put ourselves in a position where we can't actually fix things. Which is, I think, going to be, unless that's somehow remedied across the board, this is going to be our downfall. I also think it's funny that, like, all the states this is going to affect, like Texas, who's going to get, you know, all their economy is going to get blown up. Ted Cruz, never good relationship with Donald Trump. They're all like, this is bad. And all the states that are like Montana and so far away are like, we'll support you. You're literally on the other side of the country. This is nothing.
Right, right. And the GOP is against, I mean, GOP senators are against
this plan.
Yeah, they're
like, no, muy malo.
Totally. Ted Cruz said something like, he called it a $30 billion tax increase on Texans. Mitch McConnell is, you know, against it. Everyone's against it, and then the talks fell apart yesterday. So I don't know. So what could happen is that Congress could do something. Now, I don't want to get everyone excited here. Could do something that would then be vetoed by the president, but then would require a two-thirds, you know, majority to overrule the veto. I actually think that they might have those numbers.
I do too. It seems people are really against it.
CPM's really against it.
Which is saying, so if yeah. Republicans are willing to line up against Trump, that means they, you know, they really are willing to dig in on this, because typically they'll fall in line with...
Yeah, because you're messing with their money is what it means. Right.
And the other thing that's really interesting is the USMCA, which is like NAFTA version 2.0, has not been ratified. It's not... It's because we put together the thing, everyone's really excited, and they're like, oh, it looks a lot like NAFTA, so we're cool with it. And then we put a tariff on steel, and then Mexico and Canada are like, wait a second, I thought the whole point was that we don't fucking do the tariffs, right? And so we just lifted that, we just worked that out a couple weeks ago, literally a couple weeks ago, and then now stirred the pot again with this shit. So I don't know. But my point is, it's not like we have USMCA in place. So there's also that.
And it's not like Mexico can, as you were saying, do anything. They are like, most of their forces are dealing further
with
south
their
with their own shit.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Stand and hold hands across the, do a Red Rover situation? You know what I mean? People.
You should be writing.
It's not fixable.
You should be writing policy.
That is actually a really good
brilliant.
Donald Trump policy. Yeah. Why are we not setting up a Red Rover situation? And then you can say, can Juan come over? No, he can't. And we're all holding hands, so he can't make it through.
So my last question for you guys on this is, where do you think any of this lands with voters?
Well, I think it likely breaks down along party lines of who you voted for. You know, like his base is going to say like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, screw Mexico. Screw the... you know, the violent criminals that they're allowing through. They're just a gateway for the worst element to get into our, you know, like they're going to just spout the things that he spouts. And then people that are Democrats or further left or even, you know, centrist will likely, not care, you know, because they have bigger fish to fry or just things that are more of a focus. You know, so it's likely to just fall... But his voters just, I think, go for all of the red meat that he throws, you know, of anything vilifying Mexico, Mexicans, you know, brown people, generally speaking, they eat it up. So I think it'll just fall along party lines.
Leah, do you think, But if you're a Texan, Leah,
I think if you're a Texan, even Republican Texans are like, this is a bad idea. A bunch
of, right. It's, you're I think those lose border states, I mean, because other states will also lose money in the immediate term. There's like Michigan, and there's a few other states that in the immediate term would see these penalties. But so if you're Texas, what do you think?
I think Texas is like, no way.
And then you
even
think
Republican
they're like,
Texas, because it's affecting their day to day, their money. You know, and I think now they're going to step in and be like, hey, you're making this issue a little bit. And we're the ones who are going to get, I was going to use a bad word there. We're going to be penalized for this, you know, even if you thought people coming in from the border was the number one issue, this isn't the way to solve it. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think this is when centrists and even Republicans step
like base. You think base people
are
like,
hey, let's not.
Yeah,
this is not going to work, even if your goal is to stop people coming in.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
I also think that, like Ted was saying, there's so many things flying out wild right now
chaos.
That you end up picking. You're like, which thing do I focus on?
And that's every week on this show. I feel like I want to repeat the Steve Bannon philosophy, which was, let's do as many things as we can at the same time and create chaos so they don't know what to fight.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know?
It's working.
And it's working because I don't know what to fucking talk about every week. Too many. There's like both too many things, but like, yeah, I don't know. All right. We'll keep an eye on what's going on and let you guys know.
Please.
But, you know, eat your avocados now is my closing statement. Let's take a quick break and learn about our sponsors, whom we love. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about other depressing things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I used Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard. Thankfully, there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Oh my God, guys, there have been times in my life where I have had high-interest credit card debt and didn't know how to get out of it. Took years. It was painstaking. I feel like Upstart.com could have helped with that. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They reward you based on your education and your history in the form of a smarter interest rate. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. Once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 200,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit card debt, student loans, fund their wedding, or make a large purchase. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. So, this is what I think you guys should do. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/fake to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate is easy. It takes just a few minutes and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/fake. With more than 70 sizes, including their signature half-cup sizes, Third Love designs bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit in a premium feel. Just answer a few simple questions via the Third Love's Fit Finder quiz to find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Then, thanks to Third Love's 100% fit guarantee, you can wear, wash, and put your bra to the test for 60 days. And if you don't love it, you can return it and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. This is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own, with straps that won't slip, tagless labels, and lightweight, super thin memory foam cups. You guys, I'm literally currently wearing a Third Love bra right now. And these claims are true. It's super comfortable. Also, I think it makes my titties look good. So anyways, I can attest to the goodness of these Third Love bras. Actually, I have two pairs. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they are offering my listeners 15% off your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/nation and find your perfect fitting bra. You'll get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/nation for 15% off today. We are back. And before we get into topic number two, I actually wanted to let you guys know that I have a new column up in the Progressive magazine, and it's about giving people stable hourly schedules, people especially in the retail and restaurant industries. And it's a hilarious takedown of our of scheduling policies for those wage workers. And it's a really important issue, and I really want people to like know about it and get pissed about it. Mm-hmm. So please check out that article. But then more than that, the Progressive magazine, I've long been a fan. They've had an insane writers, people like Gore Vidal and Howard Zinn and Upton Sinclair have written for the Progressive magazine. It's very long, it's been around for I don't know over a century, and it's been an important voice. And I just worry about all of these publications going under. So support the Progressive magazine by subscribing. They come out with an issue every other month, and it's great, and it's a lot of food for thought. And I think people of Fake the Nation would be natural fans of this magazine. So support it if you can. All right, let us move into topic number two. Okay, so there was another mass shooting of 12 people in Virginia Beach, and it happened last week. And I was chatting with a friend the other day about, and I mentioned the shooting, and he didn't even know it had happened. And I thought, this is the new thing. Not that we need to talk about gun control. We need to do all of that. But we also need to just even know that they're happening, because they're being now relegated to actual literal page five in the LA Times. It was in the not up front page news. And that's just an example. I don't know where it stood in other newspapers. So my first question to you guys about this shooting, and there's a lot of particularities, and we can talk about Virginia and their legislative response. But what was your initial reaction to this? And do you feel – what was your initial reaction to the national reaction?
That was great, that whatever that noise was, it just came out of my mouth. But really? So I broke this down into three parts in my mind. Obviously the gun control section, and then fostering environments of workplace environments, stresses, and then
we'll get to that.
Yeah,
definitely.
And then the national reaction, which is, I don't know if you guys have read the book, The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. It's one of the best books I've ever read. But he has this whole section on how important it is to not name the people that do large crimes, because it makes it less attractive to other people who are thinking about it in their mind, because it, you know, the notoriety and sort of like, well, I'll go down in this blaze of glory, everybody will know my name, gets taken away. So on the one side, it's horrific that it's so normal that we're like, oh, another mass shooting. But on the other side of that, there's the quality, not that we want more mass shootings, but if we don't talk about the person who did it, that it becomes less attractive to other possible serial or mass murderers, because I think a part of the attraction behind it is the attention they get.
Yeah. I totally hear you. And I think in Virginia, their policy was to mention his name literally once.
And then never mention it again. And so so that's kind of how they handled it, which I thought was smart. But I do worry that we've become so desensitized that it's just kind of, and I feel the same way about our coverage of like the wars, ongoing wars. People just don't like really internalize any of this information anymore, and feeling enough to rile public opinion.
I think that's a great point. That's where my mind went with it too, is like we as the United States are purveyors of war nonstop around the globe.
The finest purveyors of war, yeah.
So it's like that's our business essentially. That's our biggest part of our budget is military. You know, we outspend the next whatever it is, 5, 7, 8, 10 countries behind us. Our military budget is astronomical. So we're constantly killing people, murdering people. You know what? It's millions, right? In between Iraq and Afghanistan since 9/11. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense that they wouldn't cover 12 people dying. And you know, people talk about the mass violence, mass shooting fatigue, but it's like, you know, like same with war. It's like it's insane that we would attach fatigue to, like, first of all, we're not even participating in these wars, you know, like it's other people, but we being the United States are at war. So like when we see violence on our soil, it's kind of with this bowed head and like the thoughts and prayers. And like when we see the face of like what it looks like, then like if we're lucky, you know, and it's and this is maybe an indication that it's not going to continue, but if we're lucky, it does get a moment of reflection. But these are the things that are going on every day, you know, around the globe in our name.
Yeah, and not only are they going on every day around the globe, but, you know, gun violence is just an everyday occurrence in the United States in every city, and that doesn't get enough attention, right? I think, and I've always thought, I think it's really important for these mass shootings to get attention because it's the only time that people seem to think about gun violence, because it's harder for whatever reason to get them to think about the number of people that were shot in a particular day, because there were more than 12 people that are shot in a particular day. But when it happens in these kinds of isolated situations, and it becomes a mass shoot and it gets the designation of mass shooting, it's somehow more gives us pause. It becomes more clickbaity news story or whatever. These lives are not more important than all of the lives that are lost. All the lives that are lost are equally important, but they don't get our sympathies every day, right? So I was like, okay, if we're not going to like pay attention to all of the gun violence, at least these mass shootings are giving us a moment to like have a feeling about it and have some activism around it. And now we're losing that too, because we're page fiving, and I keep saying page five as if people read on pieces of paper anymore. They don't. But I think technically, physically was on page five. But we're page fiving these murders, and it's just fucking. And I don't know what we can do to get people to care more.
I don't think I hate to say this, but I feel like once we had a group of children murdered, and people were like,
whatever.
Yeah. Not that they said that, but at the end of the day, if that's nothing changes, that's
basically
what it is.
What happened.
That we have, and I hate to be. Whatever this is, but it's like it seems that the mass consensus of our country is this is what it is now. Because once you have kids shot, and if that doesn't change it, you know what I mean? Then it seems like we've all decided, even though we haven't decided, but that's what that is, a consensus being like, we're not fixing this.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really get more horrible than that.
No.
Well, or the Vegas shooting. I mean, these are crazy things. And people are just asking for basic. They're like, hey, you should have a background check. That's not even That's not even like
it's supported
thing.
By, I think, 91% of people support a universal background check. It's the most popular measure.
And it's literally nothing. You know what I mean? It's the least amount of like, it's not doing much.
Oh, sorry. That was in Virginia. That number is in Virginia, just so you know.
But it's like, and if that doesn't rile us to be like, this is insane and to move, I think we've become so over. We're so desensitized by all the things coming on, everything coming at us, constant social media, that it's sort of like, it's like, I feel it has to either come to a breaking point or we're just, I don't know if we've given up.
I think the other thing politically, and in terms of like putting cultural pressure on lawmakers, in having a culture shift is like Republicans could become extremely popular if they're the ones that could stop gun violence. I mean, I think they're missing, if I wanted to be gross and political about it right now, I feel like they're missing an opportunity, you know, to be like, we believe in your Second Amendment rights and we absolutely want to maintain your thing. We just want to get rid of silencers, you know? We believe in your Second Amendment rights. We absolutely want to, we just want to have there be a universal background check. Like, I think taking a reasonable position could possibly be extremely popular and make them, you know, I think they might be overestimating the NRA base, you know, as a base of support.
Well, the maddening thing is that I don't think we even need a culture shift because I think the culture already is there. I mean, in terms of the mass culture is in favor of all these things.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's what's so maddening about all of these things, from gun policy to healthcare. It doesn't reflect the will of the people.
Yeah.
So, and what I was thinking about was a couple weeks back, maybe a month ago, a couple of kids from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas committed suicide. So, people don't talk about the after effects of violence, too. Again, like you talk about how things are kind of tucked into page five or beyond. And then I couldn't help but think of military veterans, you know, 22 a day, I think, committing suicide. So it's like obvious that exposure to gun violence in whatever form bears some long-term psychological effects. And yet we're still talking about it in the pretext of like, rights and Second Amendment and, you know, not taking away your rights as a citizen. When obviously, you know, if you care about society, there has to be some yielding from the other side and say, you know, and people always point to Australia as the example, like common sense measures can stop this.
And also New Zealand, immediately after their mass shooting, you know, had a legislative response. By the way, Governor Northam is proposing a bill that includes background checks.
You can only weigh one handgun a week. I mean, I feel like
or a month? It was like a requirement that people report. The reason, what is it? One a month.
You can only get one, which is 12 a year.
By the way, like, who? I mean, if that's not a popular fucking part of this proposal that he's proposing, what?
I was like, oh, is that really an issue for people?
Yeah. Leah, I need to have one handgun for each of my 10 fingers. Yeah, and if I can't buy. And then also.
But you could. You would just have to wait 10 months.
One a month. He also wants to include a ban on sound suppressors like the one that was used and purchased legally by the gunman in Virginia Beach. And he's demanding that the Virginia Assembly take a vote on it, because that's like the Mitch McConnell thing, right? Where these things are proposed, these possible future laws sitting on tables that just never see a vote. And taking a vote is actually very meaningful because it forces these it forces Ted, what you're saying, these people to say, what are we on the side of? And like, actually officially going on the record and saying, believe people should have more than one handgun a month. You know, like,
that's
say
like
that.
Maybe every other week, say it out loud.
Yeah. Say it out loud.
And they're
say
voting
it out
right
loud.
Soon. So like these people would go on record right before their seats are coming up for
yeah,
votes.
Yeah, exactly. So well, let's see.
Hearing it in that context strikes close to the heart because my wife and I belong to a Fruit of the Month club. And if people if people took that away, I would be upset. So now I can sympathize.
No, you understand.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. But let's quickly talk about the.
Here's the thing, though. Yeah. What if you had like an important event and you had this great outfit,
yeah,
and
you
had already bought a handgun that month,
no,
and then
right.
you didn't have a handgun no, that matched right. this ensemble?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
see where the gray area
like
comes
as an
in.
Outfit person.
Yeah,
I well, totally.
Because you are an outfit accessorizer.
Yeah, no, you're right. I know.
And if it's red, ultimately it will match the carnage that that
I
is created.
I just want to mix in with the bloodbath.
Yeah, that's great. You know what? I hope the Virginia delegates are hearing this because these are really great arguments to take to the floor. I do want to talk really quickly about the workplace aspect of this. So this was a guy that had just resigned and then went back and murdered his colleagues. Is there something here that speaks to like the greater problem of the American workplace? Can we make a sweeping generalization?
I mean, it seems inextricably linked to capitalism, which then ripples out to mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people are struggling and healthcare, obviously, right? All of these things are so intertwined.
Yeah.
It's hard to kind of just peel back the onion. But obviously, you know, someone who goes to those lengths, you're in pretty dire straits there. But you can't help but, you know, wonder what the various effects of like what the workplace conditions were, what his life circumstances were. Was he not getting the medication he needed? I don't know.
Yeah. But. Yeah. And just what I think workplace conditions are really important. And this kind of goes back to my article that I'm promoting of myself, but this important issue of like, we have a lot of expectations of people to have jobs. And then when the conditions of those jobs are untenable, we're mad at those people, you know, for not being able to do everything perfectly, pay their rent exactly on time or, you know, or whatever it is. But we're never mad at like the employers for the conditions of the workplace, and that's really, and right now we're in this kind of like for white collar jobs, this kind of weird phase where we work more hours than anyone in the world, we take less vacation, it's a nation of anxiety riddled, stress riddled people sitting in cubicles, and that anxiety and that stress, you know, for most people comes out in healthy ways, you know, maybe a kickboxing class, and then in some people with access to more violent stuff, it might come out in more violent ways. And so I think, you know, and it is all intertwined with the capitalist imperative, the pressure to have more productivity, the
less
pressure to work
unions.
On fewer mm-hmm. unions, exactly.
People are longer hours for less money. And then also, I think one of the articles talked about how other countries like talk about health in the workplace, like your working environment being a positive place. And I do feel like in America, we sort of foster this competitiveness and like people at work can kind of like go at each other because you're like, oh, this is just a workplace, you know, trying to get who's going to rise up next. You know what I mean? It's very kind of a cutthroat environment
yeah.
that you could see. Obviously, nobody is condoning the behavior, but that could push a person who is, you know, working way over time to barely make their bills and has gotten more responsibilities instead of less and isn't their healthcare isn't being handled.
Yeah.
They don't have a protection in line to be like, we need to deal with this situation.
I would love for companies to watch the Great British Bake Off
and
then be like, that's what it should feel like when you're working. People are supporting each other. There's a touch of competition, but it's not that serious. It doesn't matter.
If you need a hand getting your bake out of the oven.
If you need a hand getting your bake out of the oven, everyone's real nice.
I feel like we've just gone further and further away from valuing community.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That and in every aspect of life, From your block to your, you
YouTube
know.
YouTube comments. People just want to shit on each other.
Yeah. No, agree. That is, I think, the fundamental problem. We've from in every aspect of life, work, life, wherever, the gym, we've gotten away from.
Taking care of each other.
Taking care of each other.
Which is very sad.
You guys, I'm sorry. This was like such a fucking downer of a segment. Let us move on to, I don't know, possibly another downer? Oh, there it is. Okay. So last week, everyone was reporting on the crazy number of people trying to summit Mount Everest, threatening many and leading to the deaths of some dozen climbers. And by the way, like, it's quite expensive to climb Everest. And I think a lot of climbing requires some cash. And there's a lot of things I covet about wealth. But like extreme hiking is not one of the things I covet about wealth. Like I just don't get it, you know? But anyways, I do get going places and bucket lists and the excitement of travel. So I wanted to talk about that. So first off, like, what did you think about the crowding on Mount Everest in particular?
This has been a growing, you know, my dad's obsessed with winter mountain hiking. He read the book Into Thin Air. I don't remember when it came out, but yeah. I remember being young enough to be like, what? People are dying? It's, you know, I was very emotional. But this has been, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, what happens is that they have multiple groups up there. And as you're out of an oxygen zone, your body starts dying. You have a certain amount of time. So you go up to the base camp or whoever, the last base camp before the summit, and you have a certain amount of time to get up and get down. And if you don't turn around in that amount of time, your body starts, you don't have enough you die. So now there's all these people waiting. So you don't, the amount of time it takes you to come back, you can't get through. And what happens is people will be like, no, I want to go. They'll be at the time limit. They have to turn around and people will be like, no, I want to go. I came this far. It took me 3 years to save this money. I'm doing this. You know what I mean? And then the guys will be like, we can't make it. And then people go, you know, because they're like, I can do it. And
you just think that you're more powerful than nature.
Oxygen works.
Yeah.
But now with all the crowding, people just aren't making it. And it's becoming more and more and more of a problem.
It's fucking bananas. Now, do you think, like, who has a responsibility here? Is it Nepal? Like, what should happen?
Well, it seems as though, like, maybe we shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth in terms of if this is an opportunity to thin the herd. People are willfully saying, like, no, I can continue. It's like, well, okay, let's see. You know, like, but on a serious note.
That's horrible.
I did.
It's not that bad as long as like the guides don't have to go. You know
right.
what I mean? If it's
That's
those
true.
People that want to do it on their own, have at it.
But I did see something.
I hate both of you right now. Continue.
It's like people that want to go out in storms. You're like, yeah, but it's not just you. It's all the 911 people and the ambulance people that have to go get you.
Right, right.
That's true.
Yeah. And it's tied into that extreme culture, too, of competitiveness and like I have to complete it. And even people that aren't qualified or haven't properly trained to do it, you know.
I've never climbed a mountain. I can do this.
I can. Yeah, I got it. But the other thing in a piece that I read was how tourism has exploded, like, in my lifetime. So from like 1970 to now, like, I think it was 70 million who were traveling at that time. And now it's 1.4 billion or something like that.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Like those numbers are like so bizarre and you can't even really wrap your head around that amount of growth in 4 or 5 decades, you know, so it's definitely a problem. I don't know what the answers are because a lot of these countries depend on it for their it's their economy essentially, right?
Right. So like in some ways you're like, I get it, Nepal, like you need the money. And you probably also need the money to keep maintaining the demand, like to keep the base camp safe and resource rich or whatever happens at that base camp. I have no idea. You know, to keep everything operational, to keep the trails clear. I don't know. I don't like
clean
literally
up the dead bodies.
I think they just leave them there.
Really?
I think they freeze.
Compost?
And then they become snow.
Wow. Hmm.
They don't become snow. I get how snow works, yeah, but they become covered in snow. Okay. I don't have the facts on this. Let me just read it.
Yeah, I know. We, none of us know what we're talking about. But I think, you know, it's, so there's that. The other thing is, like, we're sort of like putting a burden on a country that doesn't necessarily have the resources to figure that out. But there are places, you know, when I was a young gal, so like around 15 years ago, like I went to Florence in Italy with my best friend, and we did a whole thing around Europe, blah, blah. And I remember when we were in Florence, and the reason that this comes to me specifically is because I went back to Florence last year. And when I was first there 15 years ago, it was like, we had strolls, we had sits, it was calm, it was relaxing, it was like super lovely. I feel like I really got the Firenze experience, right? But when I went back, it was so crowded. I mean, it was ridiculously crowded. And the global population of middle class and above people that are able to do these trips has just increased, as you're saying. And so the issue is now, it's sort of, it's a little bit like, when I got to do it, it's because I'm from America and we already had a developed middle class. You know what I mean? So too bad for you, China. Now it's like, now everybody's dealing with this, and it is literally China, right? They have such a huge population, and then their middle class grew exponentially in this time. And now they want to travel to all the coveted places on the planet.
Yes, there was 156 million people traveling from China.
Exactly. That's a crazy number. And, you know, and they're all going to the places that we've all been talking about for decades as the, you know, the jewels of Europe and the, you know, the jewels of nature and all that stuff. And I mean, in some ways, it's kind of like, we can't say don't, right? Can we? Like, no.
Yeah, because you want everybody to be able to access things,
yeah,
and you don't want it to be based on money. And so it's like, do we do a lottery where cities are like, only this many people, you have to apply in advance? Because there's also the protecting places that are, it need environmental protections, that like all the walking and the traveling is going to ruin the place. So there's that issue. And that, I don't know what people do if they set up a only certain amount of people can come in.
Yeah, I think like the Galapagos has a system like that.
Then theirs is a very low number. And then everybody applies and it's random choosing. So it's not like somebody who pays the most amount of money or whatever. But then it's also like speaking to the larger thing where it's like we have a exponentially growing population across the board of people, not only traveling, but cutting down forests. I mean, I think it's a part of a larger problem we're not discussing, which is, what are we going to do with so many people?
Right. Right.
Send them to Mount Everest.
Yeah.
And can we talk about what role social media has in this? And do you feel like it's made a difference in it just anecdotally in how people travel?
I love that story. People are like pushing people out of the way to get selfies.
Yeah. And in some cases, dying doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we know how Ted feels about that.
That's right.
So let him go.
Well, I do think that, yeah, social media, again, is such a pervasive part of our everyday lives. I mean, when we exit this building, there will be people taking selfies, you know, in the park. So it's just like everywhere you look, people are going to, it's like that lifestyle envy thing of like, you want, especially if you're traveling, right? It's probably a combination of wanting others to see what a good time you're having, and also just that you're lonely and that you want to connect and have people comment on your stuff. So yeah, I think that is a big part of it. It's because people don't just travel. They don't just travel, you know, and not document it. All of it is documented, and all of it is for the currency of likes and following and, you know, hashtagging, you know, all of those things just to get people to look at you.
I saw in one of the articles, there was a picture of all the people in the museum all standing in, I was in the Mona Lisa and everybody was just standing there taking pictures. And I don't know if, obviously we don't have an answer for this, but I don't know if museums could be like, no more cameras. You know what I mean? You have to enjoy the art. That's a part of it. You actually have to look at it with your own eyeballs and not take cameras out. And you know what I mean? I don't know what the, but it does seem like social media is taking, you know, I was at a concert where I couldn't see the band because the person in front of me was holding up
an iPad.
Their phone to film it.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're
it
here.
It sucks when they do an iPad. That's when
so big.
It's so big. It's like ridiculous. Did you hear that the workers at the Louvre actually did a walkout? And they did that because they were just like, this is too crowded. It's not safe. You're not handling this well. This is not how the art should be experienced or how it should be maintained. Like, and they just did a nice walkout. The French are super into like protests and walkout, so I was kind of like, you know, par for the course.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I mean, I hate to take it here, but going back to the last segment, you know, that's the kind of thing that, like, if these workers at the Louvre, if one of them is perhaps unstable or whatever, you know, that could lead to there's a shooting at the Louvre because it's just become untenable.
Because it's too much.
It's insane. They're dealing with this day after day of the insanity, and nobody's looking for a solution because, you know, like, the money that is infused to the economies from travel, and I did a gig in Reykjavik in Iceland.
Get the fuck out! Was it great?
It was amazing.
Oh
yeah,
my God,
yeah.
That sounds great.
But, on my dream list.
But I'm reminded because
did you see the Northern Lights?
I did not. Okay. No, the driver who took us from the airport to the hotel was talking about how tourism has exploded there. Because it was kind of their path back from the financial crisis of 2008. They just kind of...
It promoted Reykjavik a bunch, remember, yeah.
There's cheap flights, you know, from pretty much everywhere. But they said specifically, again, China, they're like, Chinese tourists is really like the bulk of kind of what keeps our economy afloat. But the driver was also saying that it's like so many now that... Like some of their natural, like springs and stuff like this. They're seeing
ruined.
Like the deterioration, you know. And, not that he was even saying like these Chinese people, just the numbers of people that are coming, you know, that again have just in the last decade just exploded.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't mean to, I introduce the Chinese into this as like, they're the, it's a
it's
numbers
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not talking about any, you know, I'm not trying to be racist.
Yeah, no,
because we all know. But it's just the numbers of people of a particular socioeconomic class that can afford to travel. That number has increased so much that they're seeing. And at some of these places, and it may have been Reykjavik, have decided to stop advertising themselves as a tourist destination because it's gotten too...
Trying to level out.
Yeah, yeah.
I think also with the social media, it's so new, you know what I mean? It's becoming so much more so quick all the time. Like I remember like 5 years ago, you know what I mean? And that we haven't learned how to deal with it yet. Like the fact that like I'll be on the stairs and somebody will be taking a picture of something on a subway step, blocking people trying to get in and out. And it's not like that person is like, I shouldn't stop human people trying to get to work because I want to Instagram this picture of a, you know, a snack cracker or whatever is happening. But we've somehow, it's over. And I think at some point it's going to have to fall off or, you know, the world will explode.
Right.
Where people are just stopping anywhere and thinking, I'm going to take pictures of anything and I can stay in here as long as I want until I get the right angle and everything around me doesn't matter. Like there is something about that has to change soon because it's overwhelming.
Yeah. I think, I think absolutely that shit is overwhelming. And I used to not read the travel section of like any newspaper. I still kind of don't because I'm filled with too much longing to go to those places. So like as a personal, like it just was, it actually became painful like at a certain point where I'd be like, oh, this place in Peru sounds amazing. I want to go so bad, you know? And I think that, you know, if I did read those things too heavily, the longing would turn into action and I would be broke.
Which is the goal of a lot of these advertisements, right?
They right.
Extract your money from you.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of just like social media has become just a big advertisement for going to these places. It fills people with envy of other people's lives. Also fills people with like, you know, a longing like, well, I could go there. Like, I could do that. I could take that selfie in Venice. And so I think it might actually be an impetus just for more actual travel in a way that, you know, so it's not only causing these weird traffic jams, but it's just causing just too much get up and go. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like it's a fascinating cycle too, because like what we were discussing before with the anxiety and the constant like stress levels that, you know, that probably capitalism and all of its tentacles induce, and then with Trump being the face of it, is further heightened. Things that are an escape from that become very desirable. So travel is certainly one of them, or like that peaceful Zen thing of like, you know, some yoga retreat, or just the opposite of Trump, you know, like going, yeah, climbing Everest, or just the thing that I'm going to detach from all of the things that remind me of my daily life. And travel is chief among those things. Like, just like, get me the hell out of here, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I get it. The travel is a way to do that. But I just wonder if it has become too much, and also, everybody is sent to the same places, right? I almost thought of like gentrification too, like because it's like people get out of where they are and are funneled into cities.
Yeah.
That then like the population is like maybe
displaced.
Moved. Yeah. So yeah. It's like, I guess, just the flow of money.
Because the popularity of the place. I mean, it also like Airbnb has an effect when it comes to that stuff, where mm-hmm. like it's maybe more lucrative for a property to be Airbnb than it is to just rent it to a person who wants to be a resident of that city. Mm-hmm. And so that ends up displacing people. And that is a phenomenon that's going on. The last thing I want to talk about out here was just like the actual climate climate change that actual flight is incurring. And, you know, when the Green New Deal came out, everyone's just like, oh, we're not going to fly. Okay. You know, whatever. And yeah, I mean, jet fuel is a huge driver of climate change. What do you guys think when you know, because I just bought a flight to go somewhere and we are all in flight heavy. We're in a flight heavy business. We have to fly mm-hmm. a lot, go places a lot. What do you think about the future of that?
You know, I'm a big walker. I always say, can I walk there?
Train travel. I have said for a long time, if I can go somewhere on a train, I will. You know,
yeah,
we just don't have this, you know, we don't have a Sella except for in the Northeastern corridor.
Well, I was saying, I think we should just go back to, right, were we talking about this the other day? I was like, we should just, for cities that don't have jobs, like so many places don't have jobs anymore, just go back to making railroads. Everybody gets a great wage. And then we can all take the trains and then people have jobs.
Problem solved.
Creating a new WPA.
People are like, we don't want to. Oh, we want trains.
We want trains.
I love trains.
I love trains. I do too.
I love when they go by late at night and you hear the noise and you're like, oh, is that the Polar Express? And you're like, it's just July, but they could be warming it up.
Well, I do want to let people know, actually, because I just was researching this to see if there's any, you know, what airlines are doing to reduce their carbon footprint. And there's actually a new flight from LAX to Chicago using a biofuel blend for their jet fuel. because fuel accounts for nearly 99% of the carbon footprint of flights. Pure biofuel would shrink emissions 60%.
Oh, wow.
And using a biofuel blend can cut it by 18%. So on the flight from Chicago to LA, United is using this biofuel blend and then buying carbon offsets to cover the rest of the emissions. And then they're using electric vehicles on the ground support end, you know, the trucks and stuff that like shuttle back and forth on the ground, to cut their emissions there. So I felt hopeful about that.
That is nice.
And I think that's an indication of where it has to happen. It's not like us, you know, like we, like you said, we have to fly for work. So what are we going to do?
What
it's
are we
like,
going to do?
You know, yeah. So it's really incumbent upon the airline, these, you know, multinational corporations to figure out how can we make it more attractive to our consumers that we are mindful of these things?
Right. But I also thought, like, there's something about having big time people say, I will, like, you know, like your Jim Gaffigans or whoever, say, if you want me to come perform in your city, you need to include carbon offsets in the price. Like, this is the organization that I want that to go to. You know, like, for example, United is using a group in Peru that's trying to protect the Amazon or whatever. So by not to cut trees.
Yeah, I think it behooves us to create a dialogue where it's attractive for companies to make those changes because they know that people will use their services because they believe in what they're doing, like cruelty-free makeup or
right.
things
exactly.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't buy this fuel, then we will walk. Like you said, we're going to be a nation of walkers.
I will walk to Los Angeles. By the time I get there, I will be thin enough to fit in. Actually be a thing. I could be like, you're saving the environment.
Starting a movement.
And you're actually going to fit into a size 4 jeans.
Well, you guys, that's the end of the show.
We did it.
How do you feel?
I feel good. I mean, you know, despite the fact that it's a lot of it is a little harrowing, we're talking about it. You know, that's half the battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to solve it. Leah just wrote like 4 policies.
Yes. I think I really get to the heart of like the most basic policy. Yeah. We need
there
a train.
There was like the Red Rover policy, a train
Rover.
Building program. I mean, it was
Walk
really exciting
America.
What happened
Walk
over
across
here.
America?
Walk, right, to lose weight.
I also think
and
it's good for
Los
people's
Angeles.
mental health. Walking is for people who are really stressed out.
Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, as New Yorkers, which I actually don't ever call myself a New Yorker. As a person who lives in New York, walking is the best. Super big fan of it. Wish all the cities could replicate what happens here in terms of the walking.
I love walking in other cities because people look at you like a criminal.
Like a, yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
a full lunatic.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. It's like you're the first scene in Rambo where someone's going to pull over and be like, we're taking you out of town.
All right, you guys, if people wanted to follow you and see all the stuff you do and read your funny things online and all that shit, Leah Bonomo, where would they do that?
Well, since we mentioned Instagram and Twitter and, you know, all my things are the same. It's at Leah Bonema, LEAHBONNEMA.
Nice. And definitely follow her and look at all of her good works and Google videos of her. There's a bunch out there. You can spend hours watching Leah.
Ooh, terrifying. Some of those have to come down, guys. I don't know who put some of those up, but I did not give my permission.
Ted Alexandro, where do people find you?
I guess the easiest place would be tedalexandro.com. And I'm on social media at Ted Alexandro. And I have a podcast, A Little Bit Me, that comes out every Tuesday. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, all of the places that you listen to stuff. A Little Bit Me.
A Little Bit Me, you guys. And also look up and see where he's performing so you can see him live and in person, because it's so fucking fun to do that. You guys, thank you so much. And you know where to find me on social media and all that stuff. What I really want to do, though, is I want to thank the people here at Fake the Nation for making the show happen. That's Harry Nelson and our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabby Alter wrote our theme music. Lily Fleshler helps with research. And listeners, God, you guys have been sending me some feedback. I'm trying to put some of the about topics that we should be discussing. I'm trying to actually put them all together and spread them out over different shows or something. I don't know. I'm figuring out how to incorporate. So send us your feedback. Keep those coming. I love it. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981. Or you could drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. That's actually a thing. It's an algorithm thing. So that's it for us. You guys, I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.